Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
June 12th, 2015, you're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You're still in Vegas, buddy.
You know what? I'm just going to move here.
I think you need to.
You know, I'm just comfortable here now, and, you know, it seems like such an effort to get on an airplane, so.
You know, you've spent more time in Vegas than anyone I know, like, easily. And this has got to be the longest. Is this the longest stretch you've ever been out there, or no?
Oh gosh, yes, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think
I've
been out here more than a week.
Oh, okay, wow.
In 10 days, most. So yeah, I'm rolling up on 3 weeks here by the time I come home.
What's the temperature?
Actually, it cooled off yesterday. We actually ran into pool cabana for the day, had a good day, and it cooled off to 93. What was that?
Holy cow! That's like Arctic. So what's going on out there?
Yeah, so we're still in the middle of this great Ante Up Poker Tour series here at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas, continuing through July 3rd, and hopefully folks that are listening will still be making their way out to Vegas this summer and come down and see us. You can go to anteupmagazine.com/goldennugget for the schedule and all the other information. And I don't know, it's just been fun. I played one more event, my last event of the series, I think, unless I play something when I come back out, and a horse event, and literally had a chip in a chair.
Wow.
Had a huge hand I lost, and I got up. I did the whole get up, put my backpack on, and start walking away. And then they did the whole, hey, well, hold on, I think you might have them covered. Came back and had $400 left. And the ante was $300. And tossed that in, and then blindly threw my last one in. It was stud 8, actually, so I didn't go out and razz on every tournament this series.
Jeez.
I didn't look at my hand, of course. You know, there's no reason to, right? And sweat it a little bit.
Yeah.
And eventually the guy that was going high pushed the guy going low out of the pot, which I thought was kind of funny. And I had the 7-6-4 showing. First card I turned over was a 5.
Yes.
Brick.
Oh.
No straight, no low, nothing.
Dagger.
Otherwise, I probably could have, like, you know, ran it up and won this event, because that's what happens, right? When you get down to the one chip left and you're doing the walk of shame and come back.
Yeah.
Not for me, though. But
that's all right, though. You fought valiantly.
So the moral of the story is only play tournaments when you're dead tired and flying in and get there just in time, because that's the only time you're going to be successful at them.
Oh, man.
Get well rested, have a nice meal, and in the right frame of mind, no chance.
Oh, man. That sucks.
But again, I hope folks come down here all the way through July 3rd. A lot of great events going on up until then. So, and I will be here through Sunday, and then back June 25th to the 29th. So
nice.
Come out and say hi.
Very good.
And then, of course, across town at the World Series, lots of interesting stuff this week. So let me just read through it here, and we can dive into it. Players have accused Valeru Coca, I believe it is, of cheating in the 10K Heads Up event. Coca says he's innocent, and the World Series of Poker says it is investigating. Sean D finally won a bracelet in Pot Limit Hold'em, beating Paul Vogt, who finished second earlier in the week as well. That sucks. Finished second twice, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Week. And I'm complaining about just getting anteed out and buddy. And then probably the big headline this week, Phil Hellmuth wins his 14th bracelet, winning the 10K Raz event. And he was quite the talk at the horse event that next day that I was playing in, because apparently at his final table he was raising with abandon with king queen showing.
Wow.
And of course hit his hand and then went on to win.
Wow. He could afford it.
Probably.
You know, you must have, like, you know, if you have king, queen shown, you have ace, deuce in the hole, and you can afford to, if your other guy out chipped, just try to end it, you know, and then get backdoor hand. That's probably what happened. That's pretty cool, though. Whereas, too, you know, he always, all those years they talked about how he couldn't win at anything except hold'em, but I think that's what, is that two now, non-hold'em?
Two in Raz.
Two in Raz, yeah. Which, of course, Raz is the easiest game to, you know, but whatever. He still deserves it. He's a fantastic player, and he's dissing himself.
So the funny thing is, at the horse table, there's one guy that was going off about this. He's like, 14 bracelets, but come on. The guy plays 30 events a year. I mean, really. I mean, the rest of us can only afford to play one or two events, so come on.
What?
And I'm just like, dude,
that's the weakest. Here's the weakest argument ever. Don't even start with that. That's ridiculous. You know, they just can't. They can't be happy. You know, a guy who finally is not really in the news for being a dork, and he's finally distancing himself from the field with these bracelets, and they still can't let him have his day. Just come on.
Poker players just refuse to be happy for some people, right?
Man, just relax.
Yeah, and this COCA issue is interesting. People are talking about it all over town as well, too, and we'll see what happens on it. But the player, the big 2+2 thread started, and, you know, once it's on 2+2, it's, oh, my God, everybody's got to read it in the comments. But apparently he was playing very slow and deliberately early in the stages of the first couple heads-up matches, and then very aggressively later on. So no one really – it didn't sound like anybody could really accuse him of anything. That seemed weird to everyone. So then you tell somebody, and the next person says, yeah, it seemed weird to me, too. And then, but he ended up finishing, I don't know, sixth or something like that.
And our buddy Sean D, maybe I'll get my $50.
Yeah, that's right.
For those of you who don't remember, we were doing the event in Jacksonville. We were doing the audio for it for it wasn't Best Bet at the time, right? It was Orange Park, I guess, still.
Right.
It was the Chad Brown thing. And we're doing the commercials and the voiceovers and all that stuff, and he's waiting on us because he has to do some of the actual real commentary for the show. You know, somebody who actually knows what they're talking about when it comes to analysis and stuff. So he's waiting to do it, and you and I are like kind of messing up our lines once in a while and stuff. And he's like, "Look, Chris, if you get it right this time, I'll give you $50 so we can get out of here." And I'm like, "All right." And I rattle it off perfectly. And I'm like, "Where's my $50? He never gave me my $50. So I'm going to hit him up next time I see him. He won all that money in the bracelet. But I'm happy for him. That's really cool. He's a real cool kid. I mean, he seemed like a kid when I knew him. He was really young. So I'm still going to call him a kid because he's still fairly young.
We call everybody kids.
We call everybody kid because we're so old. But I'm happy for him.
And then I finally made it out to the Rio. I mean, obviously, I've been spending most of my time down here at our event at the Gold Nugget, but I went over there just to see what's going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got one quick story that I thought was kind of funny. All right, so what people were telling me about the Colossus was, you know, people were moving their chips in Ziploc bags because they didn't have enough racks, apparently, right?
Yeah.
So, and they're moving from room to room and all that stuff, and that just sounded wired. So weird. So, but I'm hanging out at the Blue Shark Optics table, and Chad Holloway's there selling his World Series of Zombies comic books as well, too. And it's during the Millionaire Maker, and they break a table in, I forget which room, the Amazon room or whatever room, and they're moving into the Brasilia room, right?
Yeah.
And I watched this happen like 3 times, and it was the most hilarious thing ever in a poker tournament. You've got a tournament director leading this single file of players, all holding this little baggie of chips. to the room, and it's actually probably a good system. And he said, you know, when you get to the room, it's single file, and then as you walk into the room, somebody hands you your seat card.
Huh.
So actually probably a good system, but it's just so funny to watch it. They look like little ducklings following their mom. Or I thought about those little tour groups, you know, when one guy has that flag and everything. It's exactly like that. It's like, you know, no one was straying. Everybody was like perfectly in a perfectly straight line. It was so funny.
You should have stood up and started singing Pink Floyd's "We Don't Need No Education." Remember that video or that movie on the wall when the kids are all walking single file into the meat grinder and they jump in and, oh man, that's hilarious.
Oh man, I kind of wanted to run around and tap people on the head and go, "Duck, duck,
duck, goose."
You're out of the tournament. Sorry.
Oh man, that's hilarious. Oh.
Go to the World Series and come down and see us at the Antioch Poker Tour. And then another great announcement for the Antioch Poker Tour. We're coming to Mississippi.
That's right.
We've been working on this one for a long time. Happy to announce. So we're happy to announce the Antioch Poker Tour is coming to Pearl River Resort, And that's in the middle of the state. It's fresh off a $70 million renovation. It was just there a couple months ago. Very nice place. They're going to host their series October 1st to the 12th. Got a great variety of events, including a limit hold'em event. I'm excited about that one.
Nice.
With plenty of good price points as well, too. So visit antiupmagazine.com/Pearl River for all the information on that series, and I'll be out there for all that.
And don't forget, it's time to cast your ballot in Antiup's MPD, Most Popular Dealer Contest. Go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD and vote for up to 3 dealers in each of the 5 regions. All voters are automatically entered into a drawing to win one of more than 400 prizes from our sponsors. Voting is open until July 8th. And iPhone users, don't forget to enable your cookies for you to vote. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do a Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from Steve Seagal. Never heard of him before.
No.
He says...
We're not going to make any undersea jokes.
What do you guys think about places that allow you to straddle from any position... besides next to the blinds, I guess. He said, I straddled each and every time I was on the button, and sometimes from the cutoff, too, thereby stealing the button. I think he just put that in there so I'd have to say button a few times. I don't know. He said, steal the button preflop. Not many people straddled at all, and many people did the traditional straddle under the gun, which to me makes no sense at all. I think he knows how we feel, but he just wants to hear us say it.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that our good friend Lee Childs used to talk about. First time he saw it at a poker room, he's like, I can straddle from anywhere. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, all right, I'm going to straddle the button. Why would you not?
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, I was still watching people straddle from under the gun. And that makes absolutely no sense. The only reason you straddle under the gun because that's the only place they let you do it.
Right.
But they let you do it anywhere. Yeah, absolutely. You get so much power on the button. So if you're going to do it, that's the place to do it.
And how do we feel about the straddle, anyway?
Well, I hate the straddle.
Yeah, we hate the straddle.
I hate the straddle.
I think it's the stupidest thing ever. But if you're going to let me do it on the button, I might do that. But even then, you're just throwing money away. Yeah, you got position and you can whatever. But most of the time, you're just throwing money away. Can't tell you how many times I hear people tell me that they're on the straddle, they get aces, and they do something, and then they lose the hand anyway. And I'm like, see?
Yep.
And it's poker karma. But, yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense to do it under the gun unless you're just tired of playing small limits and you want a bigger limit and you want to make people feel uncomfortable, you know. But if you're not going to use that straddle effectively, then what's the point of it? So,
exactly.
But, all right. Hey, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snow Kwame Casino Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from Justin Harrow. It says, in a Louisiana casino, there is a straddle. Another straddle!
Yes, of course.
5 callers, a raise to $50, and then I move all in for $350. As the dealer pulls in the bets, the red light on the shuffle machine comes on with a message that 53 cards are in the machine. Ah, playing with a joker. The dealer takes out the cards from the shuffler and spreads them face down, and a blue card, which is the current deck that's being used in the hand, is mixed in with the red deck that's being shuffled. I ask the dealer to call the four, who tells the dealer to count the blue deck, and it's determined that only 51 cards are in play. The four rules that the hand is live, and the blue card that was mixed in will be treated as an exposed card. I say nobody has seen that card, but the four then turns it over and tells the dealer to continue the hand. I think the hand should be voided and everyone return their money since it was a foul deck.
All right, Ollie says, this is a situation where there are reasons to rule in either direction, but I'm quite inclined to agree with you about returning the funds to all players. The four-person in this spot seems to be regarding only the letter of the law regarding substantial action. Also, he seems to me to want to make sure the hand is played rather than misdealt so the house can receive the rake for all this time being spent on this hand. Yes, action can bind the hand and prevent a misdeal, but that can be overridden by a foul deck. Also, one can say that it is fair for everyone, since all players are using the same deck. This is faulty logic. By continuing with the hand, the floor person is opening a casino up to unnecessary liability. In a regulated jurisdiction, there's almost no player that wouldn't be granted relief payable by the casino situation by a gaming commission. This is not a spot where there are too many or not enough burn cards. If there are 52 cards in the deck in play, then as long as live, unseen cards are used on all streets, there's no damage to the player because the theoretical odds for any and all hands have not changed at all. Once a deck is found to not have, not found not to have enough cards, the odds on the hand can change drastically without the players being given proper notice by the casino. The problem can be compounded when a jackpot is in play because the odds are now changed to make any jackpot hands possibly harder to hit than other tables in the room playing for the same jackpot. This is probably the only acceptable post-action misdeal situation.
Well, this proves one thing. Given enough words, the Antioch PokerCast host will screw up reading them. I mean, you and I struggled through both parts of that. There's some thorough there's some thorough descriptions and thorough responses there. That's a lot of stuff to read there, but
we had no chance.
But it's true. I know there was no way we were getting through that. Sean D was going to keep his $50 on that one. But he's right though. It's once you know, I mean, you're just opening yourself up to, like he said, to them going to the gaming commission and saying, hey, they're liable for my money because I lost that hand on a deck that didn't have all cards in it. It's not right. And then you think about jackpots and all that. Like you said, there's just so much right to take into consideration there.
Well, yeah, that was the first thing I thought when I read this is now you're not eligible for the jackpot now.
Yeah.
Because the deck wasn't proper. So at that point, I mean, if this hand plays out and someone hits the jackpot, that's going to be a tough conversation to have, right?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry, dude. We were missing a card there and we knew it, but we're just kind of hoping that you didn't hit a jackpot, but since you did, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
No $600,000 for you.
You're just asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble. And it was weird because our guy moves all in for 350, clearly having a big hand.
Yeah.
And even he knows, hey, everyone should get their money back. I'm the one with the superior hand and the superior position and all that dead money in the middle. If I'm telling you, let us all have our money back.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
You got to think he's making the right call here. That's kind of bizarre.
Other thing I thought about is that I wonder why the deck had 51 cards anyhow, because the shuffle master, they count the cards. That's how they know, you know, when you put them in the machine. And so the machine had to count and come up with 51, and they still dealt. So that's what's interesting to me, I think, too.
Yeah, it's kind of a bizarre set of circumstances for that to have, like, could have come out with 52, but then he was mixing it with the... I mean, how do you even physically get that blue card in there? That's really weird.
I guess that's the only way, is if you pull the deck out and drop the deck or something when you're pushing the other deck in, but people would see that, right?
Yeah, you would think. The other thing would be is that somebody was cheating, and they're holding on to a card, but then...
Yeah, but so it still has to make
the show of the blue. Yeah, it just makes zero sense how that happened. That's bizarre.
Right.
I'd want to look into that. See, now if I worked in that poker room, I'd be pulling the tapes. You know what I mean? Like, not at that moment. I'm not going to hold up that game. But I mean, like, later on, save, you know, camera 6 from hour 10, to, you know, whatever. And then I want to see how that happened, because that's bizarre to me. That's the kind of stuff I couldn't let go. Hey, we got to complete O'Malley's move today. This is pretty cool. We're going to refresh our memories here with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're in a 40-person multi-table sit-and-go with a buy-in of $50. The action was crazy in the beginning of the tournament, but has since calmed down near the end. We've just started the final table of 9 players. The average is 12 big blinds, but stacks range from 6 big blinds all the way up to our 40 big blinds. We are the chip leader. The blinds post, and it's folded around to the cutoff, who shoves. This player is a pretty solid player, has played tight most of the night, but knows when to make a move. He sits with 15 big blinds, just above average. The button checks his cards and waits for a while before shoving his remaining stack into the center. He's the second big stack at the table, with 25 big blinds. This player is also what I would classify as solid. He's good at playing situations and players, and reads very well. The small blind folds, and we look down at the queen of spades, queen of diamonds. If we call and lose this pot, we are down to just above average in chips. If we call and win, we are a massive chip leader. Additionally, the top 6 get paid out, so that will put us to within 1 of the money. So, is he overshoving to isolate or to protect? What's the move?
Okay. It seems silly to fold queen-queen here, but I also don't want to fade 4 cards with it. But it helps slightly that we can beat the button and only lose 5 big blinds. So I think I'm going to grit my teeth here and make this call.
Yeah, I was thinking even if we lose to the button, we still have 15 big blinds. And if we beat them all, we're going to crush this table. So
that's true.
Yeah, yep. It's a pretty big hand, and I'm going to call. All right, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. I've got to tell you, I agonized over this decision. I seriously almost decided to flip a coin and see what the outcome was. I know that playing just to cash is never good poker, but I just couldn't get a read on this guy. He was either trying to isolate the cutoff, or he had aces, kings, or ace-king and was trying to ensure heads up. Perhaps he didn't have a thing and was just counting on neither blind having much either. Ultimately, I couldn't bring myself to make the call, and I folded, instantly regretting the decision. The cutoff turns over the ace of clubs, seven of clubs, and the button shows down the 10 of hearts, 10 of clubs. The flop comes out four tray tray, turn is a nine, and the river is cruelly the queen of hearts. The button takes the hand and eventually ends up beating us heads up with a very well-timed trap. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, try to get a reliable read on your opponents before you play a big pot against them. This was a brutal hand to fold, and one that I'll be second-guessing for years to come. I hope to see you on the felt.
I believe the old adage is, it's easier to regret a fold than a call, and if not, it should be. tough outcome here, but this wasn't an easy call, so I think regrets are just regrets.
Regrets, I had a few. That's a song, like that's like a Sinatra song. Yeah. So. No, I get you. I think you and I made the right decision, though. We got to the right outcome for ourselves. But for some reason, O'Malley just, and when you're in the heat of the moment, too, sometimes you don't have the level head, and you don't have the, you know, 2 weeks later to look back right. And reflect and say, you know what, queen probably, you know, only top six cash, you know, I didn't have the money yet, and. You know, it's a lot easier to watch these guys eliminate each other and then you move in. But it just felt like the right... With 15 big blinds, I felt like, you know, we were doing pretty well at this table, obviously, or in this tournament. So I don't really fault him for folding. Like you said, it's easier to regret that fold than to call and lose. So I don't really... You know, and like you said, results-oriented is the kind of thing that you don't want to be in these situations. So, but we made the right decision. Made me feel good that we did win, but... He could have just as well. He could have said in part two, "I got aces. We were screwed, and we got knocked out of the tournament 2 hands later." You know, so I'm not gonna judge him for that. That's not a bad fold, I don't think.
No. This is not one of those screaming, "Oh my God, what are you doing?"
Yeah. So it's tough, though. I mean, you know, it's the money when the money's there. You know, when you're sitting in your hotel room in Vegas, it's easy to say, "I call." But when you're there and you're playing in a $50 sit and go that's got a lot of people and some decent money in it. You know, it's tough to make that right decision all the time. Plus, you got you're online, so you got the ticker coming down, and you got to make a decision, and you can't just sit back and relax. So, I don't blame it all.
Absolutely. All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is One Hand at a Time, home of the poker instructional videos online. AntiUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/antiup. And we have a hand of the week from the Antia Poker Tour out here at Gold Nugget.
All right.
Woot woot, as the kids say, Johnny Campus wrote. let's see. He said he had a couple hands. I guess I should have figured out which hand we're going to use here.
Nah. Don't even worry about it. Flip a coin.
We're going to use a... We'll just use the first hand.
Okay.
All right, so this is from the 350, the limit hold'em, 100K guarantee.
Excellent.
And he said, at my starting table, I witnessed something I'll probably never see again. Six women out of nine starting players. Let's hear it for the women.
Nice. Unless he wants to pull a Jose Canseco.
That's true. Yes. he said, they had us outnumbered 2-1 and relished it. And let me tell you, they started out by kicking our asses. That's it. Yeah, well. In this hand, I was down about 12K from the 15K starting stack. Tops among the three men. Woohoo! Got that going for him.
Yeah.
And blinds were at 100, 200, no antes yet. He's under the gun plus one. And he has ace of diamonds, tray of diamonds.
I don't know. I don't know. What bothers me about these types of hands is you're first in, you're under the gun plus one. You're thinking about raising because you're first in. But you can't go to battle with this hand. You know what I mean? If you raise and somebody re-raises, you're just wasting money. So you know you're going to fold to a decent re-raise, but you got a ton of more people to dodge. I just feel like this is the type of hand where if they're passive at the table, if there's any kind of passivity at all, I'll limp with it. If I'm going to raise with it, then I got to represent it. And sometimes I'm not comfortable with that because people are calling me in position. They're just floating me and they're checking me out and seeing if what kind of aggressive player I'm going to be. I don't really know what kind of persona Johnny had. It's still kind of early, I guess. I don't know about you, but I'm not a big suited baby ace raiser under the gun plus one type of guy. So I might just limp here and see if I can get away with it. And if it's like a modest raise and we got a couple of callers, now you've got the odds to do it. You know, and then I'm not always going to do that with that hand. I mean, I may later on limp with something that's much stronger, and they'll think I have that if I went to showdown with it later, you know, and use it to my advantage. But right now, it's early on. I might limp and see if I can get away with it. It happens a lot in tournaments. So it happens a lot more than we do on the show. We're always saying, hey, let's just raise because we're first in. That's proper poker, right? ABC. But every time you're in a tournament, how many times are people limping and you're calling and you got four guys to the flop, five guys to the flop because they all limped? Happens all the time. So, sure. I mean, I realize it's a $350 entry, so you're probably getting some better play than average than your typical $55 daily, but still, it happens. So, I don't know. I mean, I played in a $1,500 World Series event, and guys were limping, so it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is an interesting one because normally my knee-jerk is just I always raise when I'm first in, and I'm not even worried necessarily about it being ace tray because, you know, if you flop diamond flush and you continuation bet, then it's wonderful, right?
Yeah.
But it's not a hand that I'd normally raise with under the gun plus one. Usually I'd throw it away. Now you're right too. If this table, if no one's raising and I think I can get in cheap and flop big, then all right. So it's a 200 at this point out of my 12,000 stack.
Yeah.
And early on, if you can flop a hand like that and stack someone, that's huge in the tournament, right? So, I mean, this is the time you want to be playing a lot of hands is when it's cheap. You know, yep. So you can build up a stack so you can be a little bit more powerful later on. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, I'm looking ahead here, and he says that most pots hadn't been raised, so that's why he limps. So if that's the case, I'm going to limp to that.
Cool. So that's cool. I tell you, especially in early stages, you know, you got some guys who are like, I want to see who's going to fight me today, who's going to be table captain or whatever, and they'll raise just to find that information out, and that's fine. But most of the time, in early stages like this, people love to limp and speculate when they can, because later on, the blinds get so big they can't afford to limp, you know, whatever. So I don't have a problem with that. Okay, so good. We all limped.
Yeah, and the other good thing, too, is it helps you change gears, too, right? So, yeah. I mean, if you're limping and hunting, which is what kind of what we're doing here, early on, and then you start raising, then they start to give you more credit for the hands you're raising with. So
yeah,
good work.
No problem.
All right, so two players limp behind me, the hijack and the button, and the blinds both call check.
Okay, cool.
So 1,000 in the pot, we see a flop of ace of hearts, nine of spades, jack of hearts. The blinds check, and it's on us.
All right, well, the thing that's going to happen is if we bet, the people behind us are going to be like, well, if you had an ace, you would have raised. That's what they'll think. Because, you know, it's funny how information means different things at different times. You know what I mean? In the beginning, you could totally say, hey, I can see you limping with a suited ace. But then when the ace comes, you're like, I can't see you limping with an ace. You know, so they may not believe us and then put some serious pressure on us. I might check. Because I'm not really worried about somebody catching up to me. Because some people have us beat probably anyway. We'll get a horrible kicker. So I might just see what is out there for bet and aggression and then decide if I want to call or even check raise and really throw them off. So my intent is to check call any decent bet. And if there's a lot of other guys, I mean, we're not hitting the flush now, so we really got to hope to hit three pair and hope we get counterfeited. The aces might be good, but I'm not holding any weight with that. So I'm going to check call a reasonable bet. If it's some serious bet and then a re-raise, I'm getting out of there.
Right, exactly. I like that.
Oh, good.
All right. Well, Hero puts out 800 to see if anyone wants to play. Says he's called by only the button, a chatty lady from Arkansas who has already informed us that women are harder to play against than men. And this table certainly has borne that out.
Wow. Button calls. Okay.
So the problem. Here's the problem now. Now we bet out the 800 and we got called. Now what do we do on the turn, right?
Yeah.
Now we either got to, like, check, slightly concede, right? or we got to keep the aggression up, and that's tough because if he's calling here, I mean, I guess you could be on a flush or straight draw, right? But other than that, it's probably an ace, right?
Yeah. What we're hoping for here is a tray or a nine, because then it's like, all right, you got aces up with a jack kicker, your hand's totally improved, or you got aces up with the trays and no one else has two pair, you're hoping. Because somebody would have two pair in this spot would probably raise.
I would think so. Particularly this board. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're thinking that you're probably good if you make two pair, even if it's the nines. You know, somebody would have ace queen or ace king, they probably would have re-raised a preflop. So we're hoping for a nine, a tray, or maybe even another ace, then our hand still gets improved, so where we don't have to worry about the three kicker anymore.
Yep.
But all right, well, let's see what happens, I guess.
All right, the turn is the five of clubs, and we're first to act.
Oof. Well, playing the way he played it, I mean, here's the deal. Here's the whole why I was talking about before. You check now, and they bet, they could have been floating you.
Right.
And if you check, if you bet now, and now they pull the trigger and raise, you've wasted that bet. And the pot's 2,600, I think. So if you're looking at a bet here, two-thirds maybe, you know, or nah, yep. maybe two-thirds is a little half maybe. So even 1,300, you know, you've already put eight out, so and you limped for two, so you have 1,000. So you had 11,000 to start the turn. Now you're betting more. You're betting more than 10% of your stack. You better mean it. You know, I don't know. It's tough to check and give up control. But it is a blank if they were drawing. So maybe you put up that facade, right?
Yeah, that's interesting now is that if she had a real ace, she probably would have raised, right? So it seems to me a straight or flush draw now, and this card does not help in either of those cases. So I think we definitely have to bet here now, and then maybe she goes away.
Yeah, what's scary is if she had ace five. That's what's scary, because that's why she just called. True. You know what I mean? You can't pinpoint that hand. Later on, you might be able to think that, but that's going to suck. It's hand of the
beat, even so. If she has ace five, we're probably not going to get raised here, right?
I don't know. You might get raised with ace five.
Well, either way, if we get raised, then we're definitely out of this hand, right?
Yeah, so I think so.
It'll save us a river bet, right?
Right. Okay. So what do you think? Like 1,200?
That sounds about right.
All right. What's he doing?
All right. Our hero says, I think I feel Razorback is likely on a straight or flush draw, so I bet out again for 1,500, and she calls.
Oof. That's a pretty big bet, too. I mean, that's more than half the pot, which is all right, but, you know, what's the next bet going to be? I mean, if you just, you're starting to get up there, so. But that's all right,
so
whatever.
What's interesting about this call now, it really makes me feel like she's on a draw.
Yeah. Or she's slow playing a monster, but
yeah, because now there's a lot of money to be putting in this, passively putting in this pot if you have an ace, I think.
Yeah, and it's tough to slow play with that coordinated flop. The turn didn't help, but that flop,
right.
You know, you got two royal flush draw cards there. You've got two straight cards one way, two straight cards another way. That's a lot to slow play. It's tough to think that she's slow playing them, and so. Maybe we might need a pair of the board situation here, I think, to win this hand. She could have something just as bad as us, like ace deuce or ace four or something that's suited, like clubs or something, you know.
Right.
But the draw is still foremost in my mind that she's drawing. You?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty confident that that's what she has. So.
Okay. It's a big pot now, though, because now you got three more grand. You got 5,600 in the middle at 100, 200, you know? And it's like, whoa. Now what are you going to bet? You're going to bet a third of that pot? So you're going to bet like almost $2,000 on the line. You're going to be down to, what? So you bet that's 35 from the 11. So you're going to be like 7,000 is hands over if you don't win.
Right, yeah.
And that's if they don't raise you. So, wow. It's pretty big. For ace tray, this is what I'm talking about.
Right,
you have a huge
exactly.
pot at 1, 200 now with ace tray.
Out of position.
Yeah, out of position. No kicker. So these are the types of hands where you want to hit them hard or get out, you know, or don't even play them. Because what would have happened if he had raised preflop? That's the other thing. Would this hand have been in there?
That's true. Yep.
You know, so you got to really, it's hard. I prefer the limp, but I want to hit it hard. If I don't hit it hard, I'm not going to take the bull by the horns here and keep betting. You know, I'm going to give up at some point, I think. So it's tough. It's such a tough game. It really is.
Alright, so our pot is now 4,100, and the river is the deuce of clubs. So our final board is ace of hearts, nine of spades, jack of hearts, five of clubs, deuce of clubs. So if she's on a draw, didn't get there.
Yeah. And if she had a worse ace than us, she might have caught us.
Yep.
Passed us. I can't bet again. I'm just going to check, and if they try to steal it, if I think it's a, act of thievery, I'll call. If I think it's ridiculous amount, I'll fold. I still have a decent amount in front of me. So that's weird. We bet 1,500 and we could call. That's $3,000. Before was 800. So that's already 4,600. It's got to be more than a 4,100 pot. It's got to be, like I said, it's got to be 5,600, I think, in that pot.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yep.
There's some math that's going on there. But I'm going to check, Scott. I'm not giving up, but I would like the option of knowing what's going to happen instead of dictating it. Because if I'm convinced she's on a draw, they're not going to call a bet anyway. And if they try to steal it from me, I could try to get something out of them on a bluff. It's just whether or not I have the stones to call.
Right.
I'm going to check.
All right. That sounds reasonable to me. And sounds reasonable to our hero. He says, I don't see much value in betting here, as I'd probably only be called by worse. So I check. Razorback starts counting out lots of chips, finally putting 4,600 in the middle.
Wow. That's a lot. All right, so is it the whole adage, hey, why so much? Because you missed your hand, you can't win without betting a lot? I mean, what kind of hand's going to call 4,600 that is going to have you crushed? Why would you bet so much to get that pot? You're betting basically pot. On the river, to somebody who showed aggression the whole way.
And you haven't, and this last card doesn't help at all, really, unless you had pocket deuces or 3-4.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense at all.
No, unless it was even 3-4 of hearts, I don't think would have gotten involved in this hand, would have folded it preflop, so. Wow. Yeah, that aces up worried me, but why so much still, though? Wouldn't you want a value bet here? Betting the pot, essentially, is not value betting. Betting the pot is either make him think I'm stealing it when I'm not, or I'm stealing it. Now you got to make that decision. It's hard to do this black and white like this and not at the table and getting the vibe, Okay, well, I'm going to go with your instinct of she was on a draw this whole time and now she couldn't win unless she bet, and I'm going to call.
Yeah, I think it's a tough call to make, but I think it's the right one because... I mean, really, she's shown no aggression whatsoever. Now, all of a sudden, betting huge. That just seems to me textbook. Hey, I'm going to make it such a big bet that they're going to have to fold. And I have nothing. It's the only way I can win.
Did we know her starting stack? I don't remember if we did or not.
We do not, no.
Yeah, but, see, that's the other thing. If she had $60,000 in front of her, I could totally see this is a bully move and just calling.
Yeah,
but she had like $8,000.
Likely at level 3, so...
All right, so he's down $3,000. So that means if other guys are down $3,000 and they were dominating the women, she could be up to like 25,000, 26,000.
That's true.
I mean? Then you're thinking, well, she can afford to do this, whereas she knows I can't. So, yeah, I'm going to call. Screw it.
All right, Harris says, that certainly gives me pause, but I felt my original read was correct. I say, missed your flush, huh? She glances up at me and quickly back down to the table. A nearly insta-call after that move, and I'm proven correct when she says you were right in mucks.
All right. Wow. Wow.
Score one for the good guy.
Yeah, that's it's not easy, but when you tell the story, it's one or the other. It's either she had a monster, but what monster hand could it have been all this time? Slow play. There's just no way you want to protect your hand, so you got to be drawing. It just tells a story. You just got to decipher it. That's all. Okay, good detective. So that's cool. Score one for the
good guy. Slow down and think about it. Yep.
And it happened on the Antio Poker Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you playing, Johnny. Appreciate you sending the hand in.
Absolutely. Another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.